To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
What's up? You know that song. You know this voice. That's right. It's your boy, Rook. Sitting here like a little hobbity with my little hobbity buddy. It's Dallas. Say hi, Dallas.
Hey, Dallas. And right over to my side, you've got your Harfoots and you got your Proudfoots and then you've got your Donfoots. And there he is.
Speaking of Don, look at that. It's the troll that's going to squish us and eat us. Hopefully Don comes soon. Oh, wait. There's Don right now.
Hello.
That's what I'm talking about.
I warned you I was going to do a Lord of the Rings intro.
Yeah. Hey, they were just advertising something, I think, during the Olympics or the Super Bowl. I thought it was a Silmarillion. It's Lord of the Rings something. It's a series?
So it's the new Amazon series called The Rings of Power. And I don't think they have the rights to the Silmarillion, but they're pretty much just using all the appendices in the Lord of the Rings, in the back of the Lord of the Rings, which, talks briefly about Silmarillion stories, right? Like Numenor and all that stuff. Anyway, that's what a $1 billion TV show looks like, apparently.
And I can't wait for it. I gotta tell you.
The biggest budget in history.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it Peter Jackson?
No, it's, I don't know any of the creative team, but Jackson and doesn't have anything to do with it, and I don't think Weta does either. Mm. Although I could be wrong about Weta.
Don't know, don't care. It looks amazing.
Doesn't it?
Character design, the costuming.
Seeing the Harfoots, seeing the dwarves. I mean, Durin the Fourth, I think it is. And we even get a scene in Numenor. Yeah, that's amazing.
We might even get to see Moria in its prime, actively running.
Yeah, oh, we definitely will. We definitely will, because Durin was the king of Moria.
Yeah.
So we're definitely going to see that. Oh my gosh.
But are we going to see him in Moria, or are we going to see him somewhere else? That's the question mark that I have. I haven't seen a lot of the scenery-esque things yet. It's been more character-focused. And, of course, the settings, the scenes, the locations are another character unto itself in Lord of the Rings that really are essential.
And either way, it looks glorious. It's going to be a lot of fun. Rook and I are the biggest Lord of the Rings marks, so of course we're going to watch it. I know Don's skeptical about any kind of adaptation, but I don't know, it looks fun. Want to see why it cost them $1 billion to make.
When the movie came out, Fellowship of the Ring, a friend of mine showed it to me before, I guess a couple of years before, online. They had a thing and they were showing little trailers of it, which I found unbelievable. And it showed that every year was going to be another movie, which is the first time I'd ever seen that. And when the movie came out, I didn't see it right away. I was interested, but people I worked with were just carrying on about it. I mean, people I really thought a lot of. And it was New Year's Day, and my wife and daughter are playing a board. I think we're playing Scrabble. And Myrna said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I'm thinking about going to movies. That's what I'd like to do." She said, "What do you want to see?" And I told her, "There's a Lord of the Rings movie I want to see." And my wife just looked just completely not interested. "Honey, I hate seeing movies based off books that you've read. All you do is complain." And my daughter is shaking her head up and down vigorously. And I say, "Yeah, I know I do, but I really want to see this anyway." And I didn't complain. My only problem was, right before the trailers came on, I thought, you know, I could go to the bathroom. Oh, I'll wait. And 3 hours. And of course, I'm not leaving, you know. I remember when the film finished, the people in front of us, the mother, looked at the family and goes, "I sat through a 3-hour movie and it's not over?" I'm thinking, "Out of the way! Out of the way!" I jumped over the thing down to the top. I was, anyway, but I love those movies. And unlike Rook, I really like Two Towers. And I don't understand why he always lambasted it all the time. But
What? I do what?
But when we started doing the show, every time Two Towers, the movie, came up, you would always rant against it. You always hated Two Towers.
Shame on you. Wow. He's like, that was a long time ago.
Well, it was a while back. And I used to say, I always say when Rook was wrong, I says, King Kong could beat Godzilla. Two Towers was a good movie. And I, you know, whatever. Ringo was a good drummer. And Rook would laugh. But I try to think why he wouldn't like it. I really liked Two Towers quite a bit. I mean, I liked them all.
I would say it was most likely due to the fact that it was missing a lot of elements. Those movies were missing a lot of elements all over the place.
Yes.
I mean, it was wrought with with issues that way. But
you know, if that movie was filmed today, it would be a television series. Because now, finally, the budgets of TV shows and CG has caught up that you can actually do a series, you know. But 20 years ago, they couldn't really do that. Because there's enough content to fill a television series.
There was one part that I was thinking, saying this, those books are so full of stuff. You could read these 60 times and still realize, oh, I didn't know that. When they're in Helm's Deep, and I'm standing up and cheering in the theater, when the elves show up to help. Wow, that's so awesome. I don't remember that. Well, I was watching the extras. It wasn't. It was awesome anyway. So I understand they made some changes. I liked the changes they made. And I liked how each one was a separate movie. I wished they had done The Hobbit the same way. But,
you know,
they had
done The Hobbit in one friggin' movie.
That's what I mean. If they would have done The Hobbit as one movie like they did the other ones, instead of three, and I thought, where is all this coming from? Well, it's in the Silmarillion, which is... I was in high school. I had read The Lord of the Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and then the Silmarillion came out, and it was everywhere. It was a hardback book. You go into JCPenney's, and they had a big display out in the middle of the store. Bookstores had it. Record stores had it. Everybody had the Silmarillion. And I was interested. Hardback books then were extremely expensive. And one of my best friends read my books. And he wanted to be a writer. And after he read the books, he decided he's going to become an attorney. Because he said, after Tolkien, I could never do anything like that. And I mentioned the Silmarillion. Because, yeah, I read it. What was it about? It was about the elves and how they went in and started mining jewels in the mountain. You know, that was his. Did you like it? It was okay. Which, when you talked about The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, the guy would just start to sweat and get excited and, you know, start throwing his arms all over the place. So I never read it. Well, it was in 93. I found it in a dollar store. And I thought, well, I always wanted to buy it. I picked it up. It was the best of all of them. I thought it was one of the most incredible books I ever read in my life.
Silmarillion.
I found Silmarillion to be, like, devastatingly difficult to read.
You're out of the podcast.
Hey, man.
I'm in Don's camp. I've read that book three times.
Oh, yeah. Well, Rook, I understand.
I will say, to my defense, I was also, like, I don't know, like, 15? The last time I tried to read it, so maybe I should sit down and make a new attempt.
Well, when I was reading it, a lot of people I work with would come by and say, oh, I love Lord of the Rings. I hated that one. Why? I saw in the library, they had the Untold Stories of J.R. Tolkien. I got excited, so I picked them up. It was the Silmarillion. They put it in two volumes, and his son... starts the whole thing off. I didn't know this. Tolkien wanted The Hobbit, the trilogy, and the Silmarillion all sold together at the same time. He always intended for that to be out. The Silmarillion wasn't ready, and they never published it until, what was it, 78, I think, or 79. And his son...
77.
Was it?
Yeah.
The Silmarillion?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, well, it's in the late 70s. And understand, I was on the world at the time and Dallas was not, so who are you going to believe?
Knives out, baby.
And I was driving. I was driving while I was on the world and Dallas wasn't. So let's put this into context. No, you could be right. But his son basically took it and finished it and put it out of the Cimmerillion. And like I said, except for Dallas, myself, and one of the girls my daughter went to college with, nobody liked it. So his son did this Untold Stories. Basically, he broke them down, and it was like a concordance, and he explained, you know, where it was coming from and what they were doing, which I found mind-numbingly boring. But when you read the Cimmerillion, the closest thing I think of, it's like reading the Old Testament of the Bible.
I enjoy the beginning section, like the first quarter of the Silmarillion. To me, it felt like I'm reading Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Because you're learning about the Valar and the Maiar and Melkor, and you hear about all these characters and how, what is it, Arda or Ea, whatever the name of the world, how it was created.
Yeah.
So it really does. I can see it being like kind of biblical, right? Because it's creation of the world. But then when you have the Valar and the Maiar, it's very much like mythology because there's these big gods, right?
Yeah, and how everything was started with a song. They were singing a song, and then how Sauron was not going to join in. Yeah, and there was all kinds of stuff. There was that man, a woman, and a wolf that could only speak three times.
Oh, yeah. Really cool, short stories like that. Like, they're fables, you know?
Yeah, when they had songs.
Some of them were morality tales.
And when you read Lord of the Rings again, after I read that, I thought, man, this is fantastic. So I went to the library and checked out Lord of the Rings, you know, each book. A lot of those songs that they talk about are in the Cimmerillion. That's why the whole world seemed real, because there was a lot more to it than, you know, it wasn't an afterthought. So like when Sam and Frodo were on the cusp of going to Mount Doom, I remember Sam was saying, and I can't remember the names, but he said, do you think this is how so-and-so and so-and-so felt when they were doing this? And, you know, mm-hmm. Do you think they'll ever sing song? Well, because it was in the Cimmerillion, which is the greatest book Tolkien ever wrote, in my humble opinion.
And you have Sauron. You actually have a character to the name, because you never really learn much about Sauron in Lord of the Rings, but here he is in Silmarillion, you know, talking to elves and men and being deceitful, and actually he's a living, breathing character, and it's so cool to see him interacting.
And he was more terrifying, I thought, because when that one king finally went up to him, you know, this castle, and said, he was going to get him, and that was it. And he demanded, and it shocked me when Sauron came out of the castle and started falling on his hands and knees to the guy, you know, saying, you know, I surrender. And I thought, what, really? And then next thing you know, he became his servant. And the mm-hmm. next thing you know, like the Red Skull and Captain America, he started taking over, undermining the guy. And I thought, I never would have saw this. It was, he was more like a living being, but really terrifying. So anyway,
because he was still a god, you know, he wasn't just an elf or a human.
Yeah, the whole
anyway, yeah.
But all the things in the Lord of the Rings movies, they do refer to some of that stuff, which was neat. So
yeah, but you don't need the Silmarillion to understand
references. No,
that's the thing, you know. So I don't know. I guess I felt I didn't need all of the backstory and all of the beforehand stuff of the Silmarillion to appreciate and love what was really Tolkien's best work, which was Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah, I agree 100% with everything you said. That's right on the money. I guess the way I'd look at it was, if you love the Lord of the Rings, here's a little bit more that you can enjoy. It's not necessary. People like us, you know, you like it. It's kind of like when Jack Kirby stopped drawing Fantastic Four, but you liked enough, you're still going to read it when other people do it. You know.
You can approach the Silmarillion from a myriad of ways, right? Because if you're going for just one big epic story, you might be dissatisfied. But like I said before, these short stories, some of them are fables, morality tales. They're just, you're going in and just being entertained by just the breadth of of his work, of Tolkien's work, and the styles that he commands, right? And even if you just like mythology and that idea, just read the first quarter of the book, and it's just very entertaining.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, it's like a book. I hadn't read Lord of the Rings since I was a kid. And like I said, when I found the Silmarillion, I picked it up and read it. And like you said, it's like reading a book of Greek mythology. And I really enjoyed myself. I thought, wait a minute, I really like this. So I will say reading Lord of the Rings at 33 is a lot different than reading it at 13. So,
all right, I'm just going to say this real quick. When you Google Silmarillion, okay, you know how it says people also asked?
Yeah.
Do you know what the very first people also asked about the Silmarillion is?
What?
Does Rook
is
like it?
Is Silmarillion boring?
I can't stress to you, with the exception of Dallas and myself and a girl my daughter went to college with, I don't know anybody else that liked it. Now, this one of my daughter's friends, big Tolkien fan, and my daughter introduced me and we were talking. And somehow we just got talking. I said, I mentioned the Silmarillion. And I said, I only know myself and one other person liked it. And then her comment was, why? That's the best one. Just to let you know, she got a hug. I didn't even know the girl, and I gave her a hug. But we're the only three people I know of that really liked it. And most of what Rook was saying, and he was saying this triumphant with his arms up and beating his chest, people find it's boring. That's the major consensus for most people. But go ahead.
I'm not sure if we know for a certainty if this is how Tolkien wanted this released anyway, right?
Yeah.
Since this was just the majority of his unfinished notes that Christopher, his son, put together, right? And there was gaps that Christopher had to fill in,
yeah,
where Tolkien hadn't written things or stories overlapped or didn't make sense with other stories. You know, so he had to do a lot of editing to finish his dad's work. So this is definitive by Christopher Tolkien standards, but I could be wrong here, but I'm not sure if we know that this is how J.R.R. Tolkien would have wanted it presented.
Right. Well, and like I said, in the Untold Stories of J.R.R. Tolkien, his son does explain that. And I don't know, I enjoyed reading the Silmarillion as what it was a lot more. His is more like a DVD commentary where they show part and he explains why, and some of it was unfinished. Rook, you might enjoy that one more. But
I think Rook had a couple of those books, like the Book of Unfinished Tales and those. I remember when we were
younger. Oh, don't get me wrong. I may not have enjoyed Silmarillion, but I have a copy of that, The Unfinished Tales. Mm. I've got everything. Pretty much anything.
Breaking up, dude.
You're turning into a robot.
So yeah, I definitely have copies of Unfinished, which yes, I did enjoy those more. I kind of chuckle at you know, some of the bits of the movie because they mix and match, especially with Hobbit. They mix and match bits of Unfinished Tales and Silmarillion into it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think that annoyed me about the Hobbit movie was it felt they forced bits of Silmarillion and Unfinished Tales in to try and make sense and lead you to the conclusion of this was all building up to the Lord of the Rings movies. It felt almost insulting to the viewer in a way.
Yeah.
That you, it was like, oh, well, I didn't know that this was the movie before the movies. You know, so personally, the greatest Hobbit movie ever was the original animated Hobbit. So.
Yeah.
The Rankin Bass.
That was a strong one.
Yes.
That was my introduction to Lord of the Rings when that came out. I'd seen people reading it, but I didn't know what it was. And when I saw that, I'm like, that's something. It just came on TV, and I watched it. And later, I said something to my dad. He goes, yeah, I liked it. My dad wasn't into cartoons or fantasy or anything, but my dad was impressed with it. In the movies, and I say that, I never went to the theater to see it. Dallas and I had a friend that was constantly getting on to us to go see it because it had Fighting Mountains in it. I found the movies on the cheap on DVD, so I bought them and watched them. My wife watched them with me. I guess sometimes they just drug it out way too long. And to me, what made The Hobbit so awesome was that character Bard. You know, when he kept shooting the arrows, and finally when the sparrow that was in the cave, you know, the cave with Smaug and Bilbo.
Yeah.
And he went to his ear and spoke the ancient language of birds that most people almost forgotten. And told Bard about the spot. Most awesome thing in the world. Well, to me, in the movie, there's so much building up to it and around it that I feel that's kind of lost. But that's me. Whereas in the cartoon, it makes you stand up and cheer. Just like when the elves showed up at Helm's Deep when they really didn't.
That is a great cartoon. I mean, Rook and I still go back and forth and sing the songs from The Hobbit and the Rankin Bass Return of the King.
There was no songs in The Hobbit.
The Greatest Adventure?
Okay.
The Greatest.
Yes. There was one.
Or Funny Little Things. Oh, what shall you with the Funny Little Things?
Oh, yeah. Two to mention the musical.
Yeah, this has been the Lord of the Rings cast with Don Rook and Dr. Busha.
Well, and you cannot forget where there's a whip, there's a way.
There's a whip, there's a way.
I am.
And Frodo of the Nine.
That's from the Lord of the Rings. That was
Return of the King.
Return of the King.
Yeah.
And Frodo of the Nine Finger.
Yep.
Okay. Explain to you about this. That movie came out. I was on the basketball team, and we had a game, out of town game, so I couldn't watch it. My boss, this is in the late 70s, he was the first person I ever knew of that bought he bought a video camera, and he bought those giant coffee table sized top loading, you know, video tape players.
Like the Betamax?
I don't remember if it was a Betamax. It must have been. But he recorded it for me. And what the deal was, to watch it, I had to babysit his three kids. And he had small kids, which, you know, I knew him from church. And so he recorded that. And then I went over his house, and one of the other guys that was on the basketball team, who was my first roommate in college, he came. He wanted to see it. So we watched. The kids were, you know, asleep. I was really surprised because it had a different, I liked it, but it had a different feel than The Hobbit, because it was kind of, you know, like a musical. It was kind of lighthearted. It was still great. But that's the first time I discovered the beauty of the videotape was you could stop it to go to the bathroom. Or you could skip the commercials. Wait a minute, what? This is like the future. And I was telling my friend later... I was telling my friend later, you know, how much I hated that, where there's a whip, there's a way. I thought it was corny. He goes, that was my favorite part of the movie. So anyway, we go to college, and we're at a discount center, and they had the record of Return of the King. Had all the artwork on it, had a booklet. And I bought it. It was a narrated story, but it had all the songs in it. Which I guess was a kid's record, but I got that kind of stuff. Everybody in the dormer, what are you? Are you watching it? And there, sometimes I have 20 guys in my room listening to that record. You know, dorky as it was, it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish they could have done all four, but anyway. Yeah, I wasn't expecting to talk about Lord of the Rings. So
surprise.
All right, Rook, you have something you want to talk about?
Oh, baby. So, let's flash back to a couple episodes ago where we talked to this guy, Bigfoot Knows Karate.
Oh, that's what it is.
Oh man, dude, I got my Kickstarter in, and let me tell you, first off, let's talk about the goodies in the back of the bag, okay? In the back of the bag for this Kickstarter, there is a bunch of pieces of art, okay? We got two nice big art pieces out of this, okay? There's a handful of cards. There's a business card. And then there's the two cards of Kung Fu Lu and Bigfoot. Okay? And it's got, like, their stats on it, their height and their weight and all that good stuff. Okay? And then there's this awesome sticker, Bigfoot Knows Karate, holding the sword. Now, guys, when we talked about this, we had, what, like a 10-page preview?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you guys right now, we really had no concept of where he was going with this 10-page preview, because it was the first 10 pages of the book. And this, like, it was action. There was action immediately in the first couple pages, you know, where he takes out the hunters. But then it, this book just goes right deep into it. I mean, not like 3 pages later, he's fighting Kung Fu.
So, that's like, awesome.
I mean, you know, and like the way Kung Fu talks is absolutely hilarious to me. You know, he keeps calling him Big Boy and, you know, stuff like this. And, but the battle is absolutely outrageous. Bigfoot pulls this move that is absolutely unbelievable. I'll show you guys the screen, but we won't reveal this to anybody else. You know, I mean, and then the bigger monkey wrench comes in, where this is all like some government conspiracy going on. Like, what is happening here? This book, you know, I thought this was going to be like some like Bigfoot as David Carradine, you know, walking the earth type book. Man, they got something else going on in this book. Some weird stuff. I'm thinking we're going to see a bunch of different cryptos involved in this book. Dude, home run. You know, I had a blast talking to Dan when he was on the show.
Yeah.
I got on Kickstarter, threw in my thing on it, and, you know, just enjoyed the ride waiting for it to get here. I got the digital copy. I didn't read it. I was just like, all right, I'm going to set this aside because I really want to see this in person. I got it in person, and holy crap, you know, this book is fun, and I cannot wait for the next issue. So definitely, you know, we told you guys to check out Bigfoot Knows Karate, but I'm telling you now that I've got the whole book in my hand and I've read it, yeah, get at it, guys. You want this weird, wild adventure in your collection.
How many pages is it that you got?
Oh, I don't even know. Hold on, let me see. A lot.
Oh, they're not numbered. You're going to have to count them live on air.
Yeah, I'm going to count them live on air.
But it's the size of a Watchman?
Even, no, it's not like size of Watchman. It's, it's a good size thick book.
Yeah.
Even cooler, though, at the end of the book, do you know what they did? All that fan art that he was talking about they've been receiving, they put everybody in the book and credited them.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, how amazing is that? Like, everybody that showed love to Bigfoot Knows Karate, you know, that was, like, throwing in on it, that was doing artwork for them and stuff like that, just showing their love for it, they published a bunch of them and put them in the book.
Right. Well, he did say he was going to do something like it, but I wouldn't expect it to be in the regular issues.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. But, I mean, it's super freaking dope. He alluded to something recently. I think it might have been on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. I don't remember what social media. But I'm wondering, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that they got picked up by a publishing company. So he made a comment that makes me believe they may get picked up by a publisher. So you may be able to pick these guys up in your local comic book shop, which is awesome. And I think well deserved for these guys.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. That's really nice. I didn't expect him to fight Kung Thulu so soon.
No.
That was my favorite.
I thought Kung Thulu would show up at the end with a big cliffhanger.
That's
like,
what I thought.
Yeah. Be like, okay, yo, yeah, now I really want to see these two fight, and I'm dying for the next issue. No, they go straight into it, hold nothing back until the end of the book when you realize that there's something really much more darker and sinister happening here. I'm just going to call him the Dark Tentacle Man shows up, and, you know, like, government, you know, conspiracy thing happening. Yeah, guys, I'm gonna pass you this so you guys can check it out. But like, I'm telling you, this was fun. I mean, I had a blast when I'm like sitting there reading it. I'm like, wait a minute, you gonna just drop Kung Thulu in right here, right now, and you know, have let them have it out? Like, I thought this was gonna be like an ongoing thing, but yeah, it is, because the way they end it, they definitely give you the we're gonna keep going on this.
Nice, nice one. Dallas.
Well, I haven't really been reading much, but there is one thing that I was reading. Oh, it's not there.
Oh, that's not there. Yeah, that's a my page is broken.
No, there is. I think it's time we discuss something here. We have a review to do on this episode.
Oh yeah.
So, would you like to start it off? Really quick, Don.
Do you want me?
Do you want to introduce this?
Yeah, we got a submission to read. The book is called. I don't know why I have so much trouble with this title. It's The Complete Origamiac Comic Series by Seth Levins. And he's got never considered as a nominee for the Nobel Prize in Literature, Pulp Affliction, Crime and Parchment, Missive in Action, Stationary Target, Origeddon, which is kind of the whole feel of the book. One thing I'm going to bring up, when he sent this to us, he mentioned that he did it in Google Frames, which is something I never heard of. So I was asking him questions about it, and I says, did you, like I thought, maybe he did the drawings and stuff and then used Google Frames to organize the pages. He drew the whole thing in Google Frames. The closest thing, just using shapes. Back in the early 90s, we continued to use it at work. We used Excel. And one of my coworkers, he decided to take the manual home. And he read the whole manual, got to be a real expert on Excel. And at work, everybody used to make birthday cards for everybody. Everybody would hand draw it, paint it, everybody was artists. And they were really neat. Well, he started making them in Excel. He drew a woman's face just using shapes, palm trees. How are you doing this? To me, Excel was just nothing but spreadsheets. So this guy did the same thing with Google Frames. He created all the stuff himself because I guess he had trouble finding an artist or just decided he'd be the artist. I find that extremely impressive. He said it's a parody of superhero comics. He mentioned The Tick, which, again, is a really good example. He mentioned a few others I don't remember, but it's done as
the
a...
The Tick would be a good example for the kind of slapstick irreverence that
you're
working
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
You know.
When I was reading it, he never mentioned this, but the humor's not the same, but I was thinking of South Park.
So as far as like what Rook said about irreverence, just kind of in your face, pointing fun at certain aspects of the government, pointing fun at how our social, how just everything works in America, basically. I can't really think of a better term for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, just sitting here like poking fun at things, right, is kind of what South Park does, and that's what he does here. He's just poking, he's poking the bear. And it's really fun. A lot of offhanded, just funny comments. Social commentary, I guess you could call it. But in a very just lighthearted, kind of fun way.
The way it starts off, the guy's on the phone. He's in his car driving. And he has a friend named Pickle he's talking to. And Pickle has set him up on a blind date.
At a protest.
Yeah, well, he's meeting at a protest to save a certain termite, I think it was.
Or like a wood, tree eating something.
Well, yeah, it was a hold on, pest control guy here is gonna chime in. it's not a real kind of termite, but a hornhook termite.
Yeah. Well, he shows up and it's a bunch of guys in flannel shirts with beards. They're lumberjacks. I think Pickle gave him the wrong directions, and he says, "Oh, hold on, guys. Yeah, let me get my sign." So he gets the sign, save the termite. Well, these guys are lumberjacks, and they don't appreciate the protest, and they ambush the guy. And they tie him to a log and run him through the mill, which is horrifying. While this is going on, there's an organization called Malfactory.
Yeah.
And they have, I guess, an evil scientist that's upset that his husband left him. And he has a side person, a woman that...
Like a henchwoman.
A henchwoman, but it's his second charge. They have an HR there. They're doing this and that, but they have... But this comic was really long. It took a lot of reading.
Yeah, there's 163 pages in the piece that he sent us.
So here's the thing: just it's an incredible feat to be able to use this program to draw anything, but to do a 160 plus graphic novel is pretty great, right? That he was able to do that. Initially, the visuals are a bit jarring because it's not what we're used to. But the story is great fun.
Well, I'm missing part of it, but she's having to dump chemicals that they made. And she's dumping it over this bridge that our protagonist is on tied to a log going through the mill. Next thing you know, he shows up at Pickle's filthy apartment as a sheet of paper. And he's conscious, he can talk, and he found he can fold himself up into what looks like a little tiny armored knight. And at one point, Pickle folds him up into a paper airplane, which is origami that all American boys and girls understand. And he throws him out the window. Anyway, he gets involved with Malfactory. At one point, he gets involved with another group of...
like a superhero group.
Yeah, and they're all pretty lame characters. Malfactory is bringing people in, trying out for their evil team. I know one of them is a woman that's perpetually pregnant, and she can give birth to... Yeah, Rook's laughing. She can give birth to anything you need. There's a whole gauntlet of this stuff. I feel bad because I'm butchering a lot of the details he added, and the names are all funny, and I didn't, I really honestly had trouble with Origami Maniac, so...
So the great thing that what I enjoyed about the book is just Seth's his creativity. I mean, every panel is just infused with silly jokes and these throwaway lines of like all these creative little ideas, right? So he's got like this wellspring of just like crazy ideas, and he's throwing them. And this is a very strange comparison, but it reminds me of Grant Morrison's old run on Doom Patrol, where he had too many cool creative ideas that they just couldn't all fit in the story. So you've got these throwaway lines and these little side ideas that I don't want to really give the fun away of this book because it's actually really entertaining to read because, like I said, you never know what's going to happen next, even though it does have an overarching story. It's just very fun to hear the characters and their ideas. And yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
There's a couple other key points to it. At one point, Malfactory creates a political candidate, and it's a man with two heads.
Yeah.
And one head is basically on the left, the other one's on the right, and that's exactly what they are. Really so cartoony.
They're for all people all the time.
Yeah.
Whatever their slogan was.
And then I think the paper Origami Maniac is involved with another candidate, which is basically a woman that possibly should run the country. She wasn't really a politician or anybody with charisma, but she would have made the right decisions, but, she never passed on television. And anyway, that goes on quite a while. He's making a lot of points, and after a while, I wish that would have been tightened up quite a bit. It goes on for quite a while. The termite does show up. and there's a lot of other things that I'm, like Dallas said, we're skipping over in case you do want to read this. There's a lot to it. I was the professor Malfactory has musical instruments. I remember there was a cello, there was a flute. I can't remember what the other ones were, but the flute's what he's chosen.
Is that the one that's going to end the world?
Yeah, it's supposed to control everybody. And I really liked how that worked out. You can plan everything. You can expect everything in the world to say it's going to go this way. How many times in your life has that actually happened? Sometimes you might be afraid your child is going to make this decision. And even though everything's set up for them to do that, they make what's the right decision, even though you didn't expect them to. Or things sometimes have a way of working out, but sometimes they go in a complete direction you never expected, and he shows that in here. I really appreciated that. In the ending, like I said, this was a long thing, and I'm reading electronically, which is not my favorite way to read these things, but if you get to the ending, it ties up kind of neat. I like that.
I like that Origamiak is kind of, he's a pretty noble person, right? Because he's trying to do the right thing at every turn. Even when he comes up against these incompetent superheroes, and he's initially is trying to guide them in the right direction.
Right.
He's always, you know, trying to one-up the villains. So, yeah, it was good.
And he's a piece of paper. Let's remember that. He's doing the noble thing. He's a good guy. But he's been screwed royalty by his friend, which I don't know why you'd ever be a friend with that guy. And but he kind of helps out the second henchman for Malfactory. I did like Origami Maniac.
So I'm just going to put this out there real quick. 36% Invisible Man. So some of the concepts that he has in this book are just so far out there.
That's what I mean. It's something you would never think of. Yes, it's hilarious. Well, it's a wellspring of creativity.
Yeah, and you know, he pulls no punches on himself with his own covers. Because if you go on Amazon, because this is you'll find it at Seth Levens, Levens, is what you'll search under Amazon. On the covers, you can buy each of these individually, and on the covers of each book is a different, like, just knock, like, against himself, like, you know, not compared for a single recipient of the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. You know, and another one is completely excluded as a finalist for the Penn Faulkner Award, you know. But, like, even in his Amazon listings, he's making these cracks and jokes. I mean, this guy has got to have one twisted sense of humor, you know.
This is one on Amazon you're talking about, and I thought this was real. I was kind of surprised you put it, but after reading the cover, I realized. It says, "We regret to inform you that your submission does not meet our editorial standards. Best of luck finding a home for your work. Please do not contact us again, ever." It says, "Rejection letter from Utter Vanity Publications."
Well, did you find the one from his sister?
No.
I better read this real quick. "After skimming this piece of flaming hot garbage, I'm sure it'll meet Dad's unconventional approval."
Oh, yeah, I did read that one.
"Or unconditional approval. Just like everything Saint Seth has done. Guess what? You're adopted. Your real parents didn't want you." this guy, like, pulls no shots, even against himself. Now, something I did also want to mention, In his work is Bigley, which, you know, if you want to get into politics and you want to see a ridiculous rendition of the past president that we've all just went through, he does a book on that as well, You know, similar art style and everything on that. So that's all on Amazon. But let me talk for a second about his Instagram. Don and I were actually chatting about this earlier. He has a series on his Instagram. I'm going to assume this is called Chewing the Cud.
Yes, Chewing the Cud.
Yeah. Like, the art style jumps dramatically.
Yes.
In Chewing the Cud. I mean, it's got color. It's got, you know, he changes things up for Chewing the Cud. And I kind of wish he'd go back and do the origami stuff using this art style as well, because this is a kick. Chewing the Cud is basically just two cows in the middle of a field, you know, having a conversation. They've got like a goat and a farmer and stuff. You know, you can find him on Instagram under Seth Levens. But, you know, this guy's sense of humor is just so out there.
The Chewing the Cud, I liked. I found it because I was starting to, you know, prepare for the blog. And the Instagram came up. I'd asked him about it. Chewing the Cud, again, was done in Google Frames. It's done in color. That one, it reminds me of the old Rocky and Bullwinkle animation. You know, and again, South Park is this limited animation, but he makes the most of it. It's a lot more elaborately done than Origami Maniac, and it's in color.
Origamiac.
Origamiac. I can't say what I read. But he positions the cows differently, the heads, the other characters, and it makes a lot of social commentary. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. When I asked him about it, he said they basically grew out of the political strip that Book Rook mentioned earlier, which, again, that's all on Instagram. If you look on the blog, wherever we have the book we're talking about here, I'll have Seth Levin's name. If you click on his name, it'll take you to his Instagram page. I highly recommend that.
I might add, what I really like about the Bigley thing is that all profits benefit Planned Parenthood.
I had asked a few questions, and I was talking to Seth through email. I can't remember, we started talking about work, but he was saying he'd like to get out of his job. He writes copy for a toy company. And I mean, it sounds like the greatest job I ever heard in my life.
Like descriptions of toys?
He just said he's a copywriter for a toy company. So I guess it'd be all that. Introducing, explaining toys.
Yeah. I just imagine like the back of like the He-Man figures, you know, like talking about the characters.
Or, you know, we explain how to put the batteries in something or how to operate something. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know... Well, when I was telling him, I thought that was actually really neat. He goes, well, yeah. He says, it is good. He says, I like it a lot better. I guess before he was a copywriter for an insurance company. Anyway, interesting guy. It's a lot of work he got out. He also has some... I asked about other comics. He said he didn't have any. Turns out, Seth, you weren't being honest with you because we went to your Instagram page and you have some pretty good ones.
Surprise!
Yeah. But the other books he's done is prose books. So I'll have those linked as well, which I guess you can find those on his Amazon page as well. But I went and counted that because he's got the book. We read it in PDFs, and it was long. Like I said, there's a lot of pages. But in between each chapter, he's got a one blank page. But I was thinking, these are quite long. So I went and counted them. The first one is 23 pages, which I thought was odd, because usually a comic is 22 pages, 24 pages, or even 18 pages. But it's 23. The next one was 33. And then after that, it goes sometimes up to 36. So there wasn't any mathematical equations as far as the page numbers for these things. But,
you know what? He's doing whatever he wants to do with it, and I applaud that for him. You know?
Yeah. I guess the only thing I would have said was, I think I would enjoy it more if it had a little editing to it. If it was certain sections maybe trimmed down a little bit, I think the impact of the story and the humor would have fit a little bit better. Saying that, I'm not an editor, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But if you like wild, out there stuff, and as we talked about with a past episode with R. Allen Brooks, he got the work done. How many people have an idea for something and
never follow through?
I'm the king of that.
This guy got the work done in spades. He really
is. Yeah. And once you really get into it, it's thoroughly entertaining. It is. It's hilarious. I enjoyed it.
When I started reading it, I was thinking he was doing this for kids. I could have seen this as a Nickelodeon show until we get to the, what was it, the 36% Invisible Man? And
My first impression when I opened it up, I was like, oh, this is going to be like a kid's book. And then I started reading and I'm like, no! Okay,
no,
this is not
he's got
book.
A lot of really... really off-color and racy things in it that kind of I wasn't expecting, so he'd have to do a lot of cleanup if it went on Nickelodeon.
But all done with a humorous touch.
It was done with a humorous touch. It was out there. So anyway, all the information will be on the blog if you'd like to find more. And again, I would recommend checking out the Instagram page, which just click on his name on the blog and it'll take you there. And I guess with that, let's take a music break.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Cyclops. to Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
All right, that was a song called Safe Harbor by my friend Paul Droninger. You've heard him in a past episode as Paulus Magnus. I guess he decided to use his real name. And I'll have him linked on his SoundCloud page. One thing interesting, Paul, when I worked with him, I was always surprised at his voice. He has this very authoritative, booming, you know, bass baritone. And I'd always tease him about it, but I used to tease him about he should be doing voiceover work or radio work. Well, out in New York, he started doing a radio show with a friend, sometimes. And I said, I've always said that. He goes, yeah, I know you always did. Well, now he's putting himself out there doing voiceover work. He's got a microphone and a whole setup. Anyway, on his page, he does the talk, and he also does the incidental music in the behind if you want to hire him. So, anyway, that was a song, and he's for hire if you're looking for anything like that. Anyway.
Nice.
All right. Well, my turn. I hate to reference Scott Connor on almost everything I say these days, but again, hi, Scott. Scott Connor was always showing me pages to a dinosaur book by a man named Ricardo Delgado. And they're nice. I never really wanted to jump out and get them, but I mean, they were excellent. Anyway, by accident, I'm not even sure how I found this, but it's a comic by Ricardo Delgado called Hieroglyph.
Hmm.
And they're actually wraparound covers.
Oh, nice.
And it's from Dark Horse. Here's the interior.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's very rune heavy. Oh, that's the third issue. It's a 4-issue series. I found the first three. I've still got to find the fourth one. If you look these up online, they're almost impossible to get. I saw it on Facebook. People were posting it, and one guy posted it, and other people were talking. Some people not like me bought it when it came out. I've never seen it. Other people were complaining about where has this been, and other people complained it's never been collected in the trade. Here's the first issue. And
wow, look at that cover.
Yeah, it starts out a spacecraft. It looks like a giant plug. And
you know what? I'm gonna say something real quick.
Go ahead.
I can see why you dig this, because immediately you know where my mind's going.
No.
The artwork style?
I have a feeling. Mobius.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going straight to Mobius. And the look of that cover and that artwork style on that opening page, very Mobius looking.
He does. One thing to explain, if you lived in the early 80s, Mobius, you know, a lot of American audiences like myself discovered him in Heavy Metal magazine when it came out in 77. And by the time of 82, it seemed like a lot of American artists had a really heavy Mobius influence. Walt Simonson put out his Star Slammers Marvel graphic novel, which is one of my favorites. And it's Walt Simonson all the way through, but I remember a friend of mine said, it has a really heavy Mobius influence on it. Steve Laiolola put out Coyote, which I keep buying the first two issues all the time. It's one of my favorites. I wish Steve would have done it the whole way. I liked Steve Laiolola before, but when Coyote came out, and it's his own work, but it had a Mobius flavor. Dennis Fujitaki, that did Dalgoda, same way. They had their own drawing styles. If you see it with eyes now, you may not see the Mobius influence, but if you see it from back then, nobody did things like that until the greatest living cartoonist at the time showed up. And this is one, and it does make me think of Mobius, but he also has a tight mechanical look to it that Mobius, even when Mobius drew machinery, it always had a fluidity to it. But you got the spacecraft. He's narrating the whole thing. He goes down to this planet. Oops. And he gets down. It's a desert planet. He's got a massive aircraft. He gets out in the spacesuit. He checks it. It's breathable. He takes the suit off. His undergarments, he hits a switch or a button, and it turns into camouflage for the terrain. And he's on a little tiny hoverboard. You see skeletons of giant creatures. He ends up at this massive temple, which it's like a Lovecraft piece, you know.
Yeah, it is very Lovecraftian in its look.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, if I was on a desert planet and I went to something like that and I'm by myself, I would be freaking out.
Bye.
It's disturbing. And they talk about it. At one point, he rolls out of bedroll. He's got a photo of his wife and son. He's talking about them. And he's basically trying to keep that out of his mind. I will say, when you leave your family, I wasn't married. I was single. But I missed my brother. I missed my parents. I missed all my friends back home when I went to a ship. And it was driving me insane because I could think of the, you know, Oklahoma was 2 hours behind California. But you could always think, oh, my brother right now is doing this. I could be with my friends doing this. Mom's making dinner. You know, it drives you insane. And I read that book, Shogun, by James Clavell, where that English pilot ended up going to Japan. And at one point, he was watching the people the second day he was in Japan, and he was thinking, he was mentally writing a letter to his son about what he was seeing. And they say, no, that's another place, that's another world, you're not there, don't do this. And, you know, it kind of helped me learn to deal with it. But this is relatable. He's basically, it sounds like he's got a contract for some company, it's not a government work, and he's supposed to inspect. They have a lot of little things. He's having a dream, he wakes up and he's got these little iPhone looking devices, three of them around him, all lit red, which I guess are sensors to protect him or warn him. There's a lot of little things there they don't explain, you just kind of figure out and assume. Anyway, it's at night, he wakes up and there's that creature from the cover. And he's going up to the temple. Again, head for the hills, dude. There's another creature floating in a ball of water. And the creature from the cover's got a staff, and they're talking. And then all of a sudden, the staff pokes the creature, kills it, and he takes what he had. And it goes from there. I find this incredible. Somebody posted on Facebook, I went and looked it up online, looked at the stuff. I thought, it looks neat, and the story really captivated me. I've been looking for it. Scott Connor told me that he has them, and he said if you try to go on eBay or something, a lot of money. I found a lot of places I could only find the first two issues. Scott told me about one site he sent me to, and they had them, and it was a reasonable price for all four issues. The site wasn't working for me. And his comment was, you could probably find all these in the dollar boxes. Well, that's what we were looking for when I was at Yancey South. I never found those. I was happy with what I did find. Anyway, I ordered these on a site I found online. I found the first three issues. I just got to get the fourth one. But a lot more stuff builds up than what I'm showing here. Like I said, it's the desert planet. It gets to one of the sides and it's all water. And all the creatures he has are some version of a crustacean, which is, I find, really alien. The creature from the cover somehow seems to be aware of him and just lets him go. He gets to some other parts, it's real barbaric, and I'm thinking, dude, he's trying to get information and go back home. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking by this time, after the third issue, I'm thinking, I don't know how this is going to end. Anyway, there's one more issue. I don't know how he ties this up. Anyway, it's incredible. Now I'm interested in the dinosaur work he's done, which is really staggering, but reading this comic, I want that. And why this hasn't been collected, I don't know, but it should be. And it should be available, collected for $1, so everybody could get it and read it. Anyway.
Nice.
So that's my segment.
Nice. Some cool looking stuff, man. That looks like something I'd like to check out.
When we meet up, I'll bring these to you so you can look at it. It's completely under the radar to me. I was saying that. How many times we found something we were never aware of? But trying to find out when this was. 1999. Which, there was a comic store in my neighborhood I went to that I liked quite well, but the guy didn't get everything. And even if you were collecting, he missed things all the time. that's why my collection was Swiss cheese, and a lot of books I like aren't part of the mainstream, so they're hard to find. And if I would have seen these, I would have bought them, but I never saw these at all. A lot of comics out there, and just because there's nothing that you don't like right now, it doesn't mean there's a whole lot of things, as I always find, that you weren't aware of that's out there that you could probably find in a dollar box, or somebody tells you on Facebook and you have to start tracking it down.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you know, there's stuff out there that we completely have overlooked over the years. That just amazing work, you know. So,
or things that you didn't like as a kid or when you're younger, and you think, why are they allowing this person to work? And then later, when you get older, you think, what is the most incredible thing I ever saw? What was I thinking?
Well, you know, this is very true. I mean, hell, I'm guilty of that personally. You know, I no problem saying that. But, you know, I was listening to another podcast recently where they were doing a breakdown of Age of Apocalypse. And they were talking about one of the artists that worked on the project, how, like, when they were, like, you know, teenagers, they looked at it like, ugh, this is horrible. And then they go back and they're like, oh my god, this guy was doing something so different and his art style is so friggin' amazing.
Yeah.
At Apple. And it's true. It just is.
No, I completely agree. That's you can look at things with different eyes at different points, and sometimes there's an artist, I can't remember who, is either you or Dallas turned me on to him. First, I didn't care for him whatsoever. Now they're one of my favorites. Sometimes just seeing other work they did pulls you in, or you read something and think, well, this is really good. Whereas it may not be a style that you like, but you grow to appreciate it after you read it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I highly recommend it. Actually, I recommend all the things we talked about today. It was good. And if you don't have anything to do, go to your library and check out The Silmarillion, or Hobbit, or the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And prepare yourself for that TV show that I can't believe cost $1 billion.
I think that's just absurd, personally.
And one thing, have you ever seen the movie Tolkien? We talked about it, you and I, in a past episode.
You know, I still haven't seen it. You know, the thing that kills me is I went looking for it recently, and I found it on something. Yeah. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to keep... and now I can't remember what the hell I found it on. I got to hunt it down again so I can watch it. There's so many things that I want to watch right now.
Good problem to have, dude.
No, it's a great problem to have. It's just, I'm getting, so, I don't know, you're not really big on anime, but...
I like some of it.
Yeah, I, like most people, I'm watching Attack on Titan right now.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely driving me bonkers waiting once a week for these episodes. You know, I still haven't even watched the one from this weekend yet. Just haven't had the time yet. But it's I'm telling you. It's like, I know before anybody messages me and tells me, oh, well, bro, you can just go read the manga. Yeah, I already know that. I'm not interested in that right now. I want to see how the show ends.
Right.
You know?
That stuff, like I said, you and your son had talked about it in really early episodes of this. I've put images on the blog. Somebody on Facebook posted some of the animation. Now I want to watch it. And when you said I'm not big on anime, I do like anime, but the anime I really like was the stuff they did in the 50s and 60s, back when we called it Japanimation. And Prince Planet, Astro Boy, Kimba the White Lion, all that stuff. And I liked Star Blazes, and it started out as Battle of the Planets. They called it G-Force. It was really Gotcha Man. I was in high school, a little different style. I love that stuff. So, high school and college, any chance I ever got to see Japanese animation, I jumped on it. Now there's just so much of it, and a lot of it...
it's crap.
Well, no, I want to say crap. It's not crap, it's just... You know, in the beginning, you'd hear about... In the 80s, they started bringing over stuff. Eclipse had, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Kumai, and Mai the Psychic Girl, which you and I talked about in one episode. And then Lone Wolf and Cub came out here in the United States. Akira. Those are incredible. But I guess the closest thing you think of is if you brought American comics over to Japan, they'd probably release Dark Knight, Watchmen, Rocketeer. You're not getting some of the lesser Marvel and DC titles that not everybody reads. You're just getting the very top, you know, cream of the crop, the top.
Yeah.
And now there's so much stuff, and whenever I'd read about Japanese comics and cartoons younger, I was always interested in the superhero and the giant robots fighting each other. And they'd explain they had sports comics and they had comics for girls. Well, girls' comics, I had zero interest. Well, I have a daughter, and her friends always read manga, and I'd read what they had. I found some of that as some of the most interesting comics I ever read in my life, the ones for the girls. They're not girly romance stories like they would have been in here. They're really interesting human stories. And, it's just there's so much stuff out there, and I'm not making the time to read all of it. But yeah, I do like some of the stuff, but I like the Dr. Osamu Tezuka style, you know, the Bigfoot cartoony style. Speed Racer is my favorite besides Prince Planet. So, and if you want to watch those, I've got all the DVDs. You don't have to wait a week. But Attack on Titan, it's one that I need to get to because that looks phenomenal. Where are you watching that from?
Hulu.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it comes out on Hulu once a week. It's great. It's coming to the end. It's almost done. And I'm just like... Oh baby, come on now, just come on, polish it off, finish it up.
So it's almost done.
Let's see.
Yeah, it's been 10 years. It's been running for 10 years.
Attack on Titan.
Yeah, because we talked about it 9 or 10 years ago. It's the first time I ever heard about it.
I don't know, but let me tell you, it's just like I just need it. Need it to like finish up.
All right, and with that, I think we're going to finish up here. Everybody, thank you for listening. If you're so inclined, if you like to draw, we use fake comic book covers on the Facebook page and the Facebook group to announce a new episode. We can't pay you for it, it's yours to own. And if you'd allow us to, if you do send one in, we'll add it to the cover gallery on the blog. We got quite a few, a big difference. Everybody enjoys when we get these. I love getting these things. If anything stopped you from doing it, when you send it in, you can add the text yourself. I usually add the title, comics, and I put the show number and the Cyclops icon. But send us something in and let me know. It's all on the contact page of the blog. And if you're any kind of musician, singer, performance artist, if you got any kind of recording, we're always desperate looking for things to play on the music spotlight. Again, send us from the contact page. We would appreciate it. We haven't gotten a lot of music from people. Again, we can't pay you for it. It's yours to own, but we could link it to your site. And again, people enjoy the music breaks. Brooke?
Make sure you check us out on our YouTube page along with all of our other medias. You can find us at bunchofdorks.com. Just click on that Cyclops. Went blank there for a second. Wow. If you got a cool project that you want us to talk about, definitely hit us up. Let us know. We would love to see your work. If you got a book that you want us to read that you think that we should definitely talk about, you want to hear our opinion, hit us up. Let us know about it. But until then,
read
more
comics.